The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and as always, I'm joined in the studio by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. Our guest this week started his career with Gillingham, having come through the youth ranks at Priestfield. After 3 years with the first team, he moved to Ebbsfleet, a club where he enjoyed both promotion and relegation. Promotion was on the agenda at Dover, while he also enjoyed a spell with Maidstone United. He's now plying his trade with Tunbridge Angels in the Bostic Premier, where promotion is again in his sights, after his goal last week helped secure a playoff place. So it's a warm welcome to Tunbridge midfielder Craig Stone. Craig, good to see you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Let's start with Tunbridge. The game at the weekend against Potters Bar, obviously a defeat, but first things first, you came off injured at half-time. How's the knee, and are you going to be okay for Thursday night?
I'm hoping so. Basically, I will be. Whether it's going to be 100% right, I'm not really too sure on that yet. But I'll be out there. I'll be playing. It was a shame. It wasn't a great performance. The pitch didn't help that. The facilities didn't really help. But you know, it's the same for both sides. And ultimately, we wasn't good enough. We wasn't good enough at what our game plan was. We knew that sort of as the game was going on and half time, and it was just very difficult to turn that around. We started really well, which was our plan, to make sure that we didn't have anything sort of carrying over from Bank Holiday Monday. So we did start well, but it just, you know, it wasn't to be, and it's just one of those games sometimes where, you know, you've got playoffs in your sights, and whatever you try and do, Thursday is on the mind. And unfortunately, you know, we lost a big player in Tom Beer. He got seriously injured. So, and then obviously I tweaked my medial ligament in a tackle as well, and there's a couple that are struggling. So it was a little bit a game where we didn't really need, but it's one of those things, we lost, but it wasn't something that's going to keep us down, and ultimately it doesn't matter who you get in the playoffs anyway, home and away, it's a lottery, you know. It's a 90 minute game, and you see what happens after that.
Yeah, I was going to say, make a difference being home or away in the playoffs. I mean, if you'd won at the weekend, you would have been at home, but I mean, Steve McKim afterwards didn't really have much weight to that. You know, it was a case of, you know, you finish the season, yeah, you are where you are after 46 games, 42 games, whatever league you're playing in.
Yeah, and that's right. Of course, you would like a home tour, just because you can get sort of more of your back in, more of the fans can come obviously and come and watch that. You know, Haringey isn't the easiest places to get to, but ultimately, you know, in the times that I've ever been in the playoffs, it hasn't really made a lot of difference. And to be honest, I've been successful in playoffs at times that we haven't been at home, so from my point of view, it doesn't really make a great deal of difference. It doesn't really make a lot of difference for the players, to be honest, either. It's just it's a shame for the fans. It's a shame for the club, because it's a bit of revenue for them. It's good gates. You know, there was sort of 1,000 there at Bank Holiday Monday, so there would have been a couple of thousand there, which is a shame. But you know, you have 40 odd games of the season to try and cement that home draw, and unfortunately, it didn't quite work out that way. But it was certainly for no fault of trying. Would it make any difference? I suppose only time will tell. But I don't think you can go to Haringey and blame anything that they've got there. You know, they've got a nice facility, they've got 3G pitch, so it's not as if you go into a Potter's Bar where it's a pitch that you're going to struggle on. You know, it's a nice surface, able to play the way we play. I suppose if it doesn't quite go away, then we say we could have played at home. But I don't think it's going to be a massive difference. And certainly from the players' point of view, it's not an issue to us.
The four teams that are in the playoffs, quite evenly matched, you would say. I mean, you look at the league table, there's only a couple of points between all of you, so you can't really say there's a standout favourite going into these playoffs, could you?
No, not really. Mersham got through right at the end, obviously the final game, and they're always a problem, because, you know, they're high in confidence, maybe didn't expect to get in the playoffs, so they'll sort of embrace that moment. Us and Haringey have been in there most of the season, and so have Cole Shorten. So I mean, all four teams are good sides. They're all big, strong, organised as they are in that league, and they can also, you know, they try and play. So it really can go any way, and they're the playoffs for the reason, you know, for the good sides that get in there, and they've worked all year to be able to get in there, and they've got it through credit, you know, through merit. They're not there because of luck or anything like that. They've earned their rights. So every game, they're all going to be difficult, and this is what we said afterwards. You know, yes, we were down that we lost, but it doesn't matter who you play, you know. But ultimately, it wasn't about Saturday, it's about Thursday. Yes, you wanted to go in with a win. It gets your confidence up and makes you, you know, you're still feeling good about yourself, but you know, at the end of the day, we're still in the playoffs, which is where we wanted to be at the start of the season. And we've got an opportunity against one of three other sides that like I say, it doesn't really matter what team we got. It was always going to be tough.
You touched on the Carl Shorten game on Bank Holiday Easter. You scored the winner.
Yes.
What was that moment like for you?
It was great. It's not something that happens very often for me. For some reason or another, I don't know. From my lack of maybe calmness in front of goal and the lack of chances that come away. But it was a great feeling, you know, to be able to score. My family were there, so I knew where they was. So I was able to go straight over to them and celebrate with them, which was great. So my son hasn't really seen me score before. He says he's seen me once, but I don't think he really remembers, because I very rarely, barely remember it. So I was able to go and celebrate with him, which was great. And he told everyone that was my first goal in 3 years. So if they didn't know, then he sort of made it perfectly clear to them. So no, it was good, and to be able to have sealed promotion on that goal as well, and you know, to win 1-0. If it was a game where you score and you lose, it doesn't really make a lot of difference. It's not something you really remember. So the fact that it was a game to seal playoffs and it's something I don't do very often, it was a moment I'll certainly never ever forget, and it's a moment my family won't be able to forget, which is great. It's great to be able to share it with them.
You've been here and done it before in terms of the playoffs. What's the key in these kind of games?
It's just keeping your nerve. It's sticking to your game plan that you know you've set up to do. It's not trying to express yourself and do things beyond what you would normally do. It's a case of, you know, you've played 40 odd games this season. You've obviously done them well. So stick to what you know how the game plan is, and to do what you've always done throughout that time. It's not very open in terms of playoffs. So normally, you know, tight affairs where 1-0, 2-1, a little mistake causes you to unfortunately go out or to go through. So it's small, you know, small margins. So it's a case of making sure that you're as focused as you could possibly be. You know, there's big crowds there, not to take too much of that in, and just to stick to your game plan, what you've been doing throughout the whole season, you know, and not to go out there because it's a playoff game and think, oh, I've got to change, got to do something different. You haven't, you just got to stick to what you normally do. And you do need an ounce of luck in there as well. And you do need to, you know, have that little bit of luck on your side. But yeah, they are a lottery, unfortunately. It is one game, one-off game, and things can happen. It could be a referee decision or whatever it can be. But if you're sticking to your game plan and you're giving it everything you possibly can, and you make sure that you don't have any regrets after that, then you can at least give yourself a chance.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
And just to give our listeners a little bit of a, you know, insight into today's podcast, it's an early morning recording as Craig's kindly come in before work. In fact, Matt's still got his KM pyjamas on. So, Craig, tell us about your day job, what you're doing these days.
At the moment, I'm working at Gillingham Football Club. I run the girls' academy there, the under-18s. So I teach them in the morning. I teach them they're doing BTEC in sport. So I teach their BTEC from 9 until 12, and then from 1 until 3, half 3, wherever you get off the training ground. I'm coaching them, so, which is great. Really, really enjoy it. Girls are superb, really keen to learn, really keen to be better as footballers. You know, they do their studies as well, which is slightly different to the boys. I also teach the boys their education, and it's slightly different because the girls are more keen on doing their education than the boys are. But it's great. You know, we've had some good experiences this year, going to Sunderland's training ground and staying overnight there and having luxury coaches that they maybe haven't had before. And you know, we've been to St George's Park, and we were in a national final this year, so we're just waiting to see where that is against Newcastle. Been to Chelsea's training ground, and so yeah, we've had some really good times. It's been really, really good. I've really enjoyed it.
Is that teaching and coaching role something that comes naturally to you?
I've always taught since my injury. That was the kind of the route that I decided to go down years and years and years ago. I went into schools and started off sort of mentoring children and that kind of thing. And then I went into teaching, did my degree, got a degree and finished that off. And then went into teaching and coaching. Obviously, coaching is my passion. That's what I love. That's what I ultimately want to do when I finish playing, is go into coaching. You know, that's something I'm looking at doing currently, is trying to get some route into coaching and trying to learn my trade. I'm doing my A licence in May. Which will be good. So That's my passion. So being able to do that as well as the teaching, which I enjoy the teaching, but you know, half and half at the moment is absolutely superb for me. I was doing it full time up in Barking and Dagenham in a primary school, which was really good. But it was, the journeys were something else, and to be able to have now the half the day coaching is perfect for me.
Do you think we'll see you managing, you know, first team level one day? Is that something you've got on the horizon?
Yeah, I really hope so. Obviously, jobs are difficult. You know, things like that is hard. I need to learn my trade first. I need to, you know, understand in terms of budgets and different things that happen. It's more to managing than just going out and putting a coaching session on. And I know that. I'm aware of that. You know, I've been in the game a long, long time. So there's people I want to learn from, and I'm at a stage now where, you know, I've learned from different managers along the way. I'm learning obviously from the gaffer now, Macca, and learning from bits that he's doing. And I went out to Grays and I learned bits from Jim over there as well. So, yeah, I mean, managing is what I'd love to do. That's the main or the ultimate aim for me, is to finish playing football and to go into management. And I'm kind of using the girl stuff as well to learn different sessions and to work on those sorts of things. And as I say, the A licence is coming up as well, which is only going to help. But yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's difficult because there's lots of managers out there that are a lot more experienced than what I am, potentially. And obviously, there's lots of managers that are out of jobs, looking for jobs. You look at, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, you look at the likes of Mark McGee now at Eastbourne. You know, if you're just trying to get a new job and you're the first, you know, it's your first ever job and you're sending an application form to Eastbourne, what's the point when you've got someone like Mark McGee that's there? You know, and it's kind of like that, and it makes it difficult, and you kind of think, well, realistically, is it going to happen? But it's something that I'd love to do, you know, and whether it's, you know, as a player coach next year learning my trade or a player assistant, whatever it may be, I need to kind of learn my trade first. I'm aware of that. I'm not ready to give up playing by any stretch of the imagination, but in the near distant future, yeah, I definitely would love to be manager here. Yeah.
It's interesting you talk about the coaching badges and the different facets of management.
Yeah.
The things like the budgets and player management almost, and those relationships between players and manager, is that not covered in coaching courses? Is that something that you'd think you'd need to learn on the job almost?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, coaching, when you do your coaching badges, it's more looking at the tactics, looking at the technical side of the game, looking at different formations and different shape and how you counteract that. So a lot of it is about what you do on a training ground in terms of putting sessions on. There is a bit more coming in now about the mental health. That's kind of awareness of being a coach and being a manager, and those sorts of things are coming into play. But you don't really learn what it's like to be a manager until you are a manager, you know, until you're assistant, or until you're a coach that's heavily involved in the coaching staff. You don't understand the budgets. You don't understand the difficulty of a chairman cutting a budget, or you going over, going under budget, you know, what the gates, how important the gates are in terms of how many people come through your door. There's lots of, you know, we was talking obviously before we started this in terms of, you know, Macca's phone and how much that was going off at crazy time in the morning, and all those sorts of things that come with managing. You don't learn them unless you're in the job. So it's a case of, yeah, you're not experienced, but you don't get experience until you're in there doing it. It's one of those things, and you just, you have a go, you take a gamble, and hopefully a chairman will take a gamble on somebody, and then it's a case of can you handle it? Do you deal with them sort of situations well? And then you learn as you go along, and you'll make mistakes, you know, and same as you do in anything. But in management, unfortunately, you know, you'll make quite a few mistakes, and it's a case of, you know, that chairmans maybe don't give so much time to managers now to actually rectify those mistakes. But yes, it's all about learning on the job, those sorts of things.
In terms of the managers that you've played for, how much have you learnt just from observing how they've gone about the job, and which managers have you looked at and thought, yeah, you know, he's really, one, had an impact on my career, but also I've learnt from how he's done the job?
I do a lot of, you know, sort of reflecting now on, because it's a route that I now want to go down, and I've decided that's a route I want to go down. It's kind of looking back now on certain managers and looking at certain parts of what they've done and what they did, and whether I'm agree with it or whether it's kind of something, like you say, to learn from. So, I mean, I was with Ronnie Jepson at Gillingham when I was sort of first really sort of set myself into the first team, and he was a good man manager, and he was you know, he would be able to go crazy, and he would go mad, and he was an intimidating figure, so you wouldn't really answer back. But he also had the banter on the training ground, and, you know, he had a laugh and a joke, and he's very good with the younger ones and making them feel comfortable and stuff as well. So there was bits from him. Mark Stimson, there were certain things that maybe he did that I would learn from, and kind of, yeah, take those sort of, yeah, we'll just say we'll learn from that, some of those situations. Liam Daish, he was great. As much as he would rip into me and would really, I don't know whether I was his kind of go-to to let some steam off, I don't know. But then I played every week under him, you know, so maybe he knew at the time that he could do that to me, and he could kind of let his steam off to me, and he could go mad at me, and he knew that I could take it. He knew that I had broad enough shoulders to kind of just bat it off and carry on, because it was one of those when I look back and I think, how was I playing every game under him every week, and in the end sort of manager's player for him in a tough season that we had at the end, when some of the changing rooms and some of the half time team talks that come my way, deserve maybe some of them, but some of them as well, I thought, well, they were a little bit over the top, but maybe you knew he could do that, you know. So I learned from him, maybe certain players that you can't do that to, more than anything, which I think there are. I think you lose certain players, and I think you completely finish them off for that game, let alone sort of half the season after that. I think there's some players that just cannot take that. And then obviously Macca this year, you know, he's a great, great man manager. He's sort of, with his senior players, he's very, very good, and the younger lads. And another one, you know exactly where you get with him. He's honest, you know, from the point where he's had to have a conversation with me at 30 years old about going out on loan. And yeah, it's a difficult conversation to have with somebody, you know, but he did it in the right way, in my opinion. There was a reason why he wanted to send me out on loan. I needed games, I was injured, and he knew that, and he was very honest about it. You know, you had Nathan Elder last year. Again, Nathan will probably tell you that it was a tough year for him last year, and he said to me a few times, this is my last year, Stoney, it's my last year. So he knew it was tough in terms of keeping up with the pace, but you know, Steve would be good about that situation where he would play him sometimes and he wouldn't, and I'm sure he had conversations with him, and then come the end of the year when you've got to almost not offer someone like Nathan Elder a contract or potentially offer him a contract with something completely different. It's the way he went, I'm sure the way he went about that business, and they're still great friends now, so I'm sure he did it in the right manner and a way that, you know, a difficult situation to deal with, but he's obviously dealt with them really well. So yeah, there's lots of managers you can kind of, you know, and like I said, Jim, I went with Jim Cooper to Grays, and he's a police officer by trade, and I could almost tell, because he would go absolutely ballistic, and then he would be down to as if like he'd just come in and you were winning 5-0 within a split second, almost like an act where he was like, right, I'm going into kind of angry mode, and then right, I'm going to be calm now. And he was very like almost staged, but it wasn't, you know, you could see the passion in his face, but he was able to calm himself, and he wasn't one that was going to sulk or wasn't going to be grumpy for the rest of the time. It was straight away he was calm, and then he was sort of able to contain himself, so he was getting the information across, and so I learned bits from him as well. So yeah, it's just a kind of you take little bits and pieces from different people.
What was that like as one of Steve's senior players at Tunbridge this season, to be sat down and have that conversation and end up going out on loan to kind of find yourself again?
Yeah, it was difficult, because I'll say difficult, it wasn't so difficult, because I kind of knew it was coming. I needed to do it myself. Steve made it so it wasn't difficult. I was injured, you know, I'd had a hernia probably for longer than I made it clear to him. You know, I was having to dose myself up a lot to be able to play, and even then it was hurting. It was really uncomfortable. It was like you'd ripped all your stomach muscles basically, and trying to run it, and it was just like it wasn't comfortable, and it was okay. Once the game had almost finished, it got better, and then it would, like, as soon as you'd sit down and try and get back up, it was times you couldn't even get out of bed, and I, you know, so I knew it was coming, and I knew obviously once I explained to him that I needed to go and have an operation, and he was great about that. He said, "Yep, go and get it done." I went and got it done and come back, and you know, I wasn't playing much before that because of the injury, so I knew that it was going to be a case of, there's no reserves, no under-23s, and that wouldn't have been something he'd want me to do anyway. I knew I'd need to go on loan. You know, I knew that that was kind of something that was going to come my way at some stage, and it was actually going to be helpful. You know, and it was there was quite a few clubs which was quite a nice thing in a way, where it wasn't a case of right, I need to get on loan, but no one's actually come in. So it was good, where there was quite a few clubs actually. There was interestingly, there was some clubs that I'd not really had any contact with, and it was kind of strange how they'd come about. But there was offers there on loan, which was something that I was pleased about. So obviously I hadn't had the greatest of seasons to start off with. The first sort of 10 games was okay, and then I did go off. You know, I was struggling. So with that said, I was quite pleased in a way, and we just spoke about it, and he said, look, you need to go on loan, you need to get some games, and we're happy with Grays, because he knows Jim. Jim knows the score. He knows that I'm only going there for a month, literally, to come back. And the gaffer said, when I come back, I'm coming back to play. You know, he's got the playoffs coming up, and he's hopefully going to be in and around it, and he's going to need me. And he was true to his word. So yeah, it was fine. Really, it wasn't a problem. Wasn't a problem.
You mentioned breaking through at Gillingham when Ronnie Jepson was the manager. You had a long association with the club. You joined as a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
How do you look back on that time now when you were breaking through at first team level?
A little bit. Obviously, it's great memories for me. But also, when I reflect now, I always question, did I do enough? And I'm not sure. Maybe part of me thinks, well, yeah, I broke in the first team and I got a first team contract and I played the game, so I did. But then part of me thinks, well, could I have done a little bit more? It was. Don't get me wrong, it was a great time. Probably where it was the best times of my life. You know, I was in a first team dressing room with people like Andy Hessenthaler, Danny Spiller, Ian Cox. You know, Brent Santo, these sorts of people. Like, you know, the changing room was something else. You know, I learned so much from there, and it was just a real good time to be going into training every day, not to worry about anything else other than to be playing football with these sorts of characters. It was brilliant. There wasn't a day that I actually woke up and thought, oh, great, I've got training. I loved it. Loved every minute of it. But yeah, it was a different kind of feeling I have now, and I wonder sort of whether I got in too early. I broke in at 16, and the expectation then maybe of myself and other people was kind of like, well, 17, 18, he'll be taking off, and maybe we can get if nothing else, we'll get some money out of him. And it didn't really go that way. It was kind of, I played a few games at 16, then another manager come in. So at first it was Neil Cooper, then Ronnie Jepson come in. Ronnie Jepson, you know, he loved me, and he kind of said, you know, I'll be fine under him. And I felt that. I did feel that I'd be fine under him. And I sort of played a few more games and was always training with the first team. And I was always involved, every squad. And then it was kind of like, then didn't go very well for him. And he ended up getting a sack. And then Mark Stimson come in. And Mark Stimson first come in, and there was his first training session. Might have been the first game he come in at Dagenham and Redbridge. I think he was in a couple of good days before, but it was Dagenham at home. Played really well. We won 4-0. Had a good game. You know, when you just kind of, even at that age, you knew when he'd had a good game and kind of a really good game. And he spoke to me at training the next time that we were in. He said, look, whoever's coming in this football club, he said, no, we'll be bringing a lot of people in, but whoever comes in, they're coming in to play with you, not to sort of knock you out the side, and, you know, they're going to be playing alongside you. He said, I really like what you do. And I thought, oh, great, you know, it's going to work out really well. And I played then about 3-4 more games, and that was then pretty much it, really. It's kind of turned that quickly, and it was kind of like, what had happened in those 4 games that had changed his viewpoint maybe that quickly. And I kind of played at Johnson's Paint Trophy against MK Dons, scored and thought, as you do at 18 years old, I'll jump on the website, and it must be a great report and all that sort of business. And it, next thing you know, it's 8 players on the transfer list, and I was one of them at the bottom of that list. And I kind of it baffled me, and it knocked me quite a lot, really. When I look and when I think back, that whole situation for an 18-year-old was just a little bit difficult to kind of understand. And I'm kind of a character where I try not to let those things sort of bother me and let it show. So I kind of just sort of puffed the chest out, really, as if I don't really care. Maybe I should have shown that I care more. I don't know. I don't know whether it was a test. Looking back now, I don't know whether it was just part and parcel of football, and I should have embraced it. I don't know. But it was a strange scenario to be in. It was difficult to understand. And that's kind of, it kind of filtered out from there, really, which was, so it was a bit of a shame the way it finished. But honestly, one of the best times of my life. So I still remember those.
Was that how you found out you'd been transfer listed by?
Yeah.
What was on the club website?
Going on the club website. Yeah, that morning, I literally, like I say, I woke up and I thought, yeah, let me have a look at that. It's going to be, hopefully, my name will be on the top or whatever it was. And yeah, it was seven players. I thought it'd be interesting. And I went down, as I went down, I was on there. You know, and I was on there with people like Andy Crofts and Ian Cox, Nicky Southall. So it wasn't just me. There were some big, big players on there. So at the time, I had an agent, and he was kind of like a friend, really. And I rung him up and said, like, I'm on a transfer list. What do I do now? I said, like, you know, is it a case of I'll just find a club today? And he said, oh, don't worry. He said, I'll ring the manager and just see what it's about, really, because I didn't have a clue. And he said, did you see it coming? I said, no, I scored last night. You know, because I didn't see it coming at all. And so he rung the manager and he said, no, I just want him to go out alone. He just needs to get some games. So I said, okay, it's fair enough. That's not a problem. That'll be fine. Then. I'll go out alone. I get that. I'm young, so that's not a problem. Went into training the next day and I was told I wasn't allowed to join in with the first team. And there was like seven of us that were, at the time, we were told we had to run around the top of the Beechings Cross training ground. And I'm running around with people like Nicky South or Ian Cox. It's quite an enjoyable time, really. I'm thinking, wow, might be some good players here, you know, and Andy Crofts and people like that. And I just, rightly or wrongly, I don't know, but I went and knocked his door after training and said, well, you know, what's that all about? Why am I running? Why am I not allowed to train? He said, well, your agent rang me. He said, I don't like agents ringing me. He said, if you've got a problem, you come and speak to me. I said, okay, fair enough. I said, but who else am I supposed to call? You know, I'm just wake up and see it on the internet. I'm not going to pick up the phone and ring you. You know, I rang him and he phoned you, kind of thing. And he was like, okay, you know, you can train with the first team tomorrow. And he was doing me a favour. But it was kind of, and then it didn't really. I mean, I went out on loan to Brentford, and a great club to be going on loan at. When I think back now, to go from Gillingham to Brentford on loan was massive. But, you know, I went out there with a thigh injury, and again, I'm probably my own hindrance sometimes, and I had a thigh injury that I went back to Gillingham and said, you shouldn't be playing. I carried on playing because I thought, this is my chance. I can't not. I can't be injured and go back to Gillingham where they obviously don't want me. So I played through it and probably didn't do myself as best justice as I possibly could have done. But then Brentford said, you know, if you ever get released by Gillingham or anything goes wrong with Gillingham, just give us a call and we sign you straight away. So in the back of my head, I'm going back to Gillingham and I'm thinking, well, whatever happens, I'll probably go to Brentford now anyway. And that kind of, all those sorts of experiences, you know, and almost learning things from me now, you know, you don't trust what that happens until it's in your hand, you know, because I kind of went back to Gillingham and probably didn't give it everything I could have done. It may have turned it around. He may have said exactly what I wanted from you to go out alone, got your games, bang, you're back in my thoughts. But I didn't really. I kind of went back, played every now and then, probably didn't make the most of my time and thought, well, I'm going to Brentford anyway, I want to go there. And then that didn't come off either, so I was a little bit stuck in a bit of a difficult situation.
So in 2008, when Mark Stimpson released you, I mean, time tells now that was the end of your involvement as a Football League player. So you dropped into non-league. How did that affect you at the time, and how did the next move come about?
Yeah, difficult. To be honest, dropping out of the Football League at that stage was my choice, if you like. I could have gone on trials at places. I could have gone in and Hibernian in Scotland asked me to go up there and train and have a look there. And I didn't want to go. Didn't want to go that far. And there was a few league clubs that I could have gone in for training, or they were keen, but obviously just wanted to see me in training first, and I didn't want to do that. So Ebbsfleet come in, they were around the corner from me. I'd literally just got with my wife now, who was a girlfriend at the time, and I didn't really want to be going away too far from home. And so I just kind of moved in with her, and I said, no, you know, we'll stay as local as we can. And Ebbsfleet was a team that come in, and they just won the trophy. We were told they were just going to have a real go. Their budget was good. They were just going full time. And I thought, yeah, that suits me. We'll go to the Conference Premier. And at the time, I thought, I'm going to have a good season, see what happens, and hopefully get back in the Football League that way. But get a lot of games under my belt and go that route. And my agent kind of suggested that as well. So coming out of the Football League at that stage was more of a choice at that stage. But yeah, as it turned out, obviously that was the last involvement.
It didn't quite go to plan, did it? I mean, you were playing games, but then the injury happened.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if I'm honest, it was harder than I anticipated. I didn't realise the league would be quite as strong as what it was. Because at the time you're 18, you don't really, and I speak to some of the Gillingham under-18s now when I teach them, and they, it's funny, they go, what league are Tunbridge in? I go to Bostic Premier, and they go, so how many leagues that below this? And I kind of think, they don't look anywhere below what Gillingham Football Club are at. They don't even know who's in League 2, and they certainly don't know who's in non-league, where, unfortunately, a lot of players from that age group of Football League will end up playing. But they have no idea, and I didn't at the time. I didn't, you know. I thought, well, go to Conference Premier, and you know, I've been in the Football League training every day. I'll play really well, and I kick on and get out of there. And it was nowhere near that, you know. It was the first sort of 10 games, played centre midfield, and it was tough, you know. There's some good players in there, some really good players that were pros that just didn't want to. Now I understand it because I'm in it myself. Pros that just didn't want to have that sort of commitment in the Football League or their ex-league sides, you know. It was a really tough league, and I got moved to right back. Liam Dace moved me to right back, and it was I was actually then starting to do really well. I got about 30 games under my belt, so that part of it was working. I was getting games that I was hoping to play consistently, and I was, and I was just starting to make a little bit of noise, if you like. And there was rumours that whether I'm true they were, that the England C team were looking and stuff like that, and they were quite interested. And then the injury come along, and then it was away at Wrexham, and that kind of changed everything, if you like.
It was a bad one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a double break, tib-fib, just below the knee. So it was that bad, actually. Surgeons had told me you'd probably struggle to ever play again because of the height of it, and because it was so close to the knee. It couldn't be pinned or plated, so it was going to be heal itself, which is always a risk with kind of how it heals and how long you have to spend in plaster. And so they said, you're probably going to struggle to ever play again. And then,
what was that like to hear that?
It was tough. It was really, really hard. And I'm kind of a character who wouldn't listen to that anyway. I'll be honest, I wouldn't listen, and I didn't listen. And probably should listen more than I do. But you know, when someone tells you you're going to struggle to play, I just thought, well, you're a surgeon, you've never really played football, so you know, we've got physios and stuff that will be able to sort all that problem out. It's not until you're actually involved, and once you actually sit down and you're sort of a couple of months into that injury, that you think, actually, am I? You know, actually, he could have been right. And it was horrible, real horrible experience. And I know, you know, there's many players that have been through it, which is a shame that so many players have been through it. You know, a good friend of mine, Pure, you've had on here recently, has been through it, and I've kind of tried to help him as much as possible, because, you know, it's a tough, tough time. And you do feel like, especially when you've only ever played football, you have to reflect on what you're going to do with your time. You know, I had to go to a job centre to sign on. You know, I literally didn't have a single penny to my name because F3 couldn't continue to pay me. That was after the second time. So I broke it once, double break, come back from rehab, jumped, landed, and it broke again in the same place. It wasn't quite ready. So I was then sort of in plaster again. I did the whole process over again. So I'd literally just come out. I'd been running for a few weeks, running with a bit of a limp. And the physio, I said to the physio, look, how are we going to... And he said, look, To stop you from running with a limp, you've got to make it stronger. I said, okay, what do I have to do to make it stronger? Well, we need to do some bounding, we need to do some jumping and strengthen it up. So that's what I did, jumped. It was at the stadium, actually. He was training there, jumped, landed, felt my foot go, and that was it. It was like a cartoon character where it just massive lump on my shin, got up on crutches, walked to the physio room, and knew from then on I'm now really struggling. You know, that's the second time it's broken. My wife turned up and was beside herself, and obviously then that second time, it was about a month or so in, I just literally come out of plaster, and you know, they paid me all the way up to them, which was great, and they just said, look, we can't continue to pay, we don't have the finances, we just don't have it. And I was like, but I'm in plaster, what do you want me to do with my life then? What am I supposed to do now? And they said, well, I don't know, these answers, I don't know, but we just, it can't be us, we just can't do it. So yeah, I had to kind of go and sign on. I had to go down the job centre, and they kept trying to find me jobs. They said, "What can you do?" And I said, "Well, not a lot, because I'm on crutches." You know, and it was strange, very strange. They was trying to find me some jobs, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go and be a footballer. Once I'm fit again, I don't need any of this. Like, I just need me £80 or whatever it was. You know, that's all I needed. I said, it's the only way, just so I can eat, just so I can survive. You know, I just need that. So they were trying to find me jobs, and I was signed on for probably, I don't know, 3-4 months until I was literally able to do some rehab. And then it was kind of like, I went off and did the rehab and struggled, found it hard. My ankle wouldn't really move because it'd been in plaster for so long. My leg had lost so much muscle, it was untrue. When I took the cast off for the final time, you know, my dad come with me and he said, "You all right?" I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." He said, "You sure you're all right?" I went, "Nah." And I was sick, you know, I was physically sick, where my leg had just felt like it was literally waving. It was just a bit of skin, you know, there was no muscle. And there was nothing there, and I felt my leg out of plaster probably for a good maybe 8-12 months in total when you look at the both together. So it was and then you kind of, I got back to part fitness, I would say. I was able to jog. I was able to literally jog, not sprint. It was more just jog, and I could pass the ball with it. And I was starting to get a little bit more sort of enthusiastic back in the game again, but there were so many issues in terms of my ankle and different problems that I've had to kind of go along with, and yeah, it was tough. And I thought about giving up. I thought about not carrying on playing as you do, kind of thing, and whether I could actually play. But as I say, I don't really listen to people when they tell me they can't. And I always had the drive to go and make sure that I got back at some level. And I was, you know, pretty pleased with the level I've got back to since then.
When you did get back playing, it was Maidstone United, initially. But how pivotal was the move to Ebbsfleet in terms of them offering you a second chance, as it were, to kind of have the career that you've had since?
Yeah, it was massive. I did go to Maidstone. I knew Pete Knott, who was manager at the time. I was youth team player under him, and he said, "Do you want to come back in and play some games?" And I said, "Look, Pete, I can barely move." I said, "I've not played for I don't know how long, so if you're happy for someone to come in and God knows what's going to happen, and that's fine." And he was like, "Yeah, that's fine, that's what I want you to do." So I did, and I went in with the first game, and I had a really good first game, and I remember now everyone was kind of like, "Carl, you know, he's back, he's all right," and I thought I was, and then gradually over time it got harder and harder, and it's a really weird stage where when you come back from something like that, your leg just gives up on you, and it was kind of like your leg would stop being able to move, you'd stop being able to run, and it'd feel like if you're going to take the next step it was going to collapse. It was a really weird feeling. So I played a few games there, and then I struggled, and I shouldn't have really been in the team, if I'm honest, but Pete just kept putting me in. Maybe, I don't know, maybe expecting me to be able to pop up with goals like I do these days. I don't know what it was, but he still used me. He still played me, and I wasn't really able to get around the pitch, but that was good of him anyway. And then yeah, the Ebbsfleet come back up, and Liam Dace was great, and he gave me that opportunity again to come back in and train. He said, "Look, you won't be on the same money you was on." He said, he was honest about that. He said, "And you need to come in pre-season and almost trial, and we need to see how you are, and we'll go from there." And I thought, yeah, no, let's do it. And there was not a single other club that were willing to take me, so I went in there. And luckily I was fit, did a good pre-season, was super fit because obviously I'd done more running than anything else. And the games come along, and the pre-season friendlies went well. He went, "Yeah, look, we'll have you back in, we'll offer you a contract." And I played. I played every game under him. And as soon as I was back and signed, I played every week. He gave me a new contract within a couple of months, like he promised. He said, "As long as you're okay, and we'll give you..." I was on non-contract initially, and then he got me on a contract after about 2 months. And that was sort of history now, if you like, and that was the starting point for me again.
Was you playing at right back at this time? Because that's where he introduced you before. Did he keep you there?
Yeah, he kept me at right back, and that was it. Then he was I've been a right back ever since that moment until Macca's moved me back in centre midfield. He brought me straight back into a right back position, and that was good because I wasn't in the thick of it. I wasn't kind of in terms of, you know, the all the action in the middle of the park. You can sometimes get away with a little bit more at fullback, so that helped coming back in there from my injury as well. It helped me sort of get those sort of 10-15 games of back playing and that sort of understanding of the game again. And so yeah, that was where I played, and that's where I went on to play for him maybe another sort of 3-4 seasons after that. And obviously, yeah, went off to Dover and continued to play at fullback there.
You mentioned the first time you came into Ebbsfleet, the club was really on a high, having won at Wembley and looking to kick on and be full time. When you went in the second time, the complete opposite. They'd just been relegated and Liam was building a pretty much a completely new squad. So what was it like going in at that time, and how did the season, well, we know the season ended up being successful, so how did he and how did you do it?
It was, for me, it was similar to how I went in the first stage, because it was when I first went in, obviously it was full time, which was maybe different, because the second time it wasn't, but it was kind of just, I was almost like a new player. I was a new player, and then the second time, even though I'd been there before, I was a new player again, because all the players that were originally there were pretty much gone, and it was a new team. But it was a different feel to the place. You know, when I went in there as a full time, it was kind of like, we're looking at kicking on, we're looking at getting these new facilities, we're looking at big budgets, and players are on some good wages. And then it was the second time we come in, it was kind of like, well, we don't have that now, we're now part time, we're obviously in the Conference South. So it was a completely different, in that sense, in terms of the club's feel. But there's still the same people there. There's still great people there that I'm still friends with now. You know, Duncan Holt and people like that. Absolutely superb when I did initially break my leg, and the things they did for me in terms of, you know, they sent my family away to Spain and looked after me and really did what they could when I had the injury. And they still do, you know. So them sort of people were still there, which was great. So it was... in that sense, it was just like I was meeting new players and having to prove to new players that I could play football. But the same sort of staff were there, so it was fine. It was good.
Having spent all that time with your leg in plaster, going to the job centre and signing on and thinking about quitting the game, to have that day at Farnborough at the end of the season, the playoff final, when you lifted the trophy and celebrated promotion, what did that moment mean?
Yeah, it was like a special moment. Yeah, it was a difficult time, because the day before, my granddad had just had a stroke, so he was due to come to the game, and my mum was there, and my wife and stuff like that were there, and dad was there, and all those sorts of like family members were there, but he was due to come, and I don't think anyone ever knew. I don't think anyone ever does know, apart from close family. But he had a stroke the day before, and it was bad. You know, we were told in the hospital at that stage that he probably wouldn't come through. As it was, he has. But he was told that he probably wasn't going to come through. So it was a difficult kind of game mentally, and it was a bit of a weird feeling. Obviously went to the game and it was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable to win, and to win in the way that we did as well. Farnborough were top of the league. You know, they were the team that we were going to struggle to beat. They were paying a big money. They had some big name players for non-league level, whereas we were a little bit like a team we'd put together, and some of the names, you know, we weren't massive names. We weren't the big names in non-league on the big money. We were just a team that put together that just really wanted to do well. And so it was a good moment, because as soon as I finished there, I was able to go straight down to hospital and show my granddad the medal and stuff like that, and left it with him that night. So, yeah, that was a double special moment, if you like, that for me it was kind of... It was all the day before and the night before was just trying to blank that out, and because I knew that he would have been there watching. You know, that's exactly what he would have wanted to do anyway. So when I played the game and was able to bring something back and share it with him, which was good.
A couple of young players in that team who stood out at the time, Michael West and Tom Phipp. How good were they?
Very good, very very good. Westy went on and played in the Football League, but he would have played for a lot longer if it wasn't for his injury. And the same as Phipsy, you know, they were very very good young lads that were playing, again, they were playing week in, week out, and impacting, having a large impact in the Conference South, which, you know, if players do that now, they probably skip straight into League One. It was different times then. It maybe didn't happen as much. It was that sort of thought process where, nah, it's too big for them to jump, whereas now, obviously, a lot more, they would have stood a lot more of a chance. But they're good players, really good players. But that was the sort of squad we had. We had to have a couple of those younger players that were coming. And I was only young at the time as well. I was only sort of 20, 21. And, you know, we had Scott Ginty in there who scored a lot of goals that season. Another youngster, Joe Howe, come in at the time. And so we had a lot of youngsters. And we had a lot of people that you would never have, before that season, you wouldn't have thought, quite, that's a big signing. You know, you only look at maybe one or two. Paul Arame is a good signing, good leader. A great addition from Liam in terms of bringing someone in like him around the younger lads. You look at Preston Edwards, you know, he was, I think he was about 18, 19 at the time. Got on to have a great career and he's been, you know, a top goalkeeper playing for England for many games. You need, he was only young at the time, but you know, we were just good at what we knew. What we could do, we were good at that. We were good at sticking to that, and we just had a real good group. You know, social group. We'd go out and socialise with each other. We'd go and have a beer after the game, and we just had a real good atmosphere around us. And fair play to Liam for creating that in such a small budget.
It's amazing when you talk about how young you were at the time that you fitted so much into that first part of your career, didn't you?
Yeah, it was crazy, and. It, people say to me now, "Cool, you're still playing. Like, how old are you now?" I say 30, and they're like, "Come on, you're older than that." And I have to sometimes. I feel older than that as well. You know, I feel like I'm sort of late 30s and stuff like that. Sometimes I say, "Oh God, I can't be doing this with these young kids anymore." I think people say, "You're only 30, Craig," and I'm like, "That's true." But it so much has happened at that young stage and that young early part of the career that you know is. I think it makes you feel older. It kind of makes you feel like you've been around forever. You know, I first started playing senior football when I was 16. You know, I had two double breaks at that stage, you know, three promotions, and it feels like it's been a long, long career, you know, but it's I've got a lot of life experiences from it and a lot of very, very, very good memories that I just wouldn't change for the world. So yeah, it does feel like I've been around for an eternity.
Going up into the Conference Premier then, with Ebbsfleet, you sort of consolidate in the first season, but gradually kind of things off the pitch and the strength of that league, it was all catching up with you, wasn't it? And
yeah.
You said at the start of the podcast, you kind of hinted at stuff that was going on behind the scenes in what turned out to be your last year there, the relegation, the sort of what's happening in the changing room and the team talks. Give us a bit of an insight into what that was.
Yeah, we struggled. It was tough. You know, we were going to places like Luton, Wrexham. We couldn't survive at that stage. We were still on that small budget. We still had that same Conference South team that sort of went up with, you know, and Liam showed faith in them because he had to as well. So he's shown faith in them. And we just couldn't survive. The clubs were too big at that stage. You know, Stockport County come down and they were sort of having 5,000, 6,000 there every week, you know. And we were at Ebbsfleet sort of having 700-800 people. So we weren't even getting the gates where the clubs were bringing in the fans, because at the time, we was Ebbsfleet. No one, you know, Wrexham fans, they didn't want to come down there. They weren't interested in coming to Ebbsfleet and standing around and getting soaked because there was no shelter. So we didn't even have the revenue coming in from there, and it was tough. You know, we were chasing the money towards the end. We were told that we may not get our money. We were out a couple of months and we were told you may not get it. It's nothing we can do about it. The club could be going completely under. We don't know if there's even going to be an answer for United. So we can't even say whether you're going to get paid, because we don't know if any of us are going to get paid. And that was, we had a bit of a chance of staying up, but that was a nail in the coffin. You know, that was kind of it for us, where, you know, when you're told you don't even know if there's a football club, everybody almost gives up. You know, the people that behind the scenes that are driving it on and trying to find sponsorship, trying to do what they do and trying to bring the money in and the gates, what's the point if there's not going to be a football club, you know? So it was a shame. It was a horrible way to finish. And obviously we had relegation, and it was always on the cards. Like I say, it was going to be a tough ask anyway. But yeah, it ended in relegation. And I feel for Liam really more than as much as, you know, not that he'd appreciate me saying that, but it was a tough time for him, and it was almost like left a sour. You know, he did everything, absolutely everything at the time, and I think it kind of left a sour taste in his mouth, and kind of thought, you know, management isn't for me. And that's why people, when I say I want to be a manager, they're like, really? You know, how do you deal with that situation, and when you're told there's going to be no football club, but you've got to put a team out against Luton away, but you're not going to have a football club potentially the 2 weeks later? How do you get your team to win for you? How do you get them to actually want to run around or gain that extra yard to be able to compete with someone like Luton? No idea. I don't know. Until you're in that situation, I don't know, is the answer to that. But it doesn't put me off, because I haven't been in it. But I'm not surprised where you see some managers, you think they've never come back. And I'm not surprised, because actually they're on peanuts themselves. They're not really earning a lot of money. And do they really need the hassle? You know, you have some great times, but unfortunately in football you have a lot, maybe more, difficult times as well. So it's a shame how that finished. But yeah, the Kuwait owner come in just after and sort of brought everyone. He paid our wages and said, whoever he paid, whoever was there before, basically we all left, but he paid our wages and got us out of the way. And then he's turned the club around, and I'm praying to God it's not another full circle, but he gave him some at least a good couple of years.
How much did you admire Liam at the time for not walking away during that season? Because, as you say, that what he had to contend with, he could have easily walked away and gone into another job as well with his stock in the game.
At the time, didn't really think much of it at the time. Obviously, you thought that's his job. You know, we could walk away as well, but we're not going to, because you just try and chase money. But on reflection now, it's massive, you know, for him to stay there, you know, because he had a lot of young players. Like I said, when you think about it now, he'd almost probably taken that father figure on and thought he's not just going to leave players in the lurch. You know, young kids that are going to... We would struggle, you know. It was bills needed to be paid, and some of the older players there that were probably earning his case more. But I think he, you know, credit to him, and probably can't give him enough credit and thank him enough for sort of sticking with the boys. And he didn't really allow us to think too much about the money coming in. He would just say, you'll get it. You know, he did kind of generally believe that we'd get it, and we did get it. He was right. Even though there's every chance he probably thought what he was saying was just an act. I'm sure he had no idea whether he was going to get it or not, because there's no football club you can't chase money. It's as simple as that. So, but he's also then thinking about his own career. You know, he was just starting in management. He had an amazing time at Ebbsfleet to win the FA Trophy and to get promoted from the Conference South to the Conference Prem. And it's almost like that gets forgotten about when something as bad as that happens. It's like you leave with that feeling, which is not the best feeling to be leaving with. And almost, like I say, it's almost, I think, he's turned his head in terms of management.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
So as your time at Ebbsfleet was clearly coming to an end, you moved on to Dover quite quickly. Was there interest straight away that they wanted to bring you in?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of clubs probably got the feeling or got the heard about the situation at Ebbsfleet, so got in contact with quite a few of the players. And Chris Kinnear was the first person who got in contact with me about Dover. And obviously they were in the Conference South, but wanted to have a real go the following year. He told me what he wanted to do and this sort of thing, and what he thought for me and what he wanted from me. And he just basically said, look, I'll sign you straight away. So don't worry about anything at Ebbsfleet going on. Don't worry about trying to find a club in the summer. Just as soon as the last game of the season's done, I'll sign you. And again, he was true to his word. He ran me straight up, offered me a good contract. He actually offered me probably the most money I'd been on so far. So that was obviously quite nice at this time when you've struggled for money for so long. And they were a good club, you know. He spoke to me about what they were going to do, and in terms of the stadium and the fan base, they were a good club. So I was happy with that. I was chuffed to bits to go from relegation and not to be very old, and for someone to say, look, we'll give you a contract, then great, I took it, and it was good.
A season that ended in very dramatic circumstances.
Yeah, very weird. The whole process was kind of strange, you know, where Chris Kinnear spoke to me throughout most of that summer. As soon as he had signed me, I almost acted as like one of his agents or a coach or whatever it was for him. But all the Ebbsfleet boys was kind of like, there was a few of them, Liam Bellamy, Nathan Elder. It was like, can you get hold of them? And I was like, well, yeah, I can certainly speak to them and try my best. And it was day-to-day phone calls with a player and then the gaffer. And it was like, yep, he's interested. What can you pay? And he's like, right, let me know sort of what sort of money he wants, whether it's $2 billion. And I went back and it was to and fro. And in the end, we signed... We signed quite a few, and then a few went the other direction. It was really weird. It was almost like, obviously, Steve Brown went there, and his connections were from Dover, and Chris Kinnear, for some reason, I think, you know, his son was there. His son was at Ebbsfleet for a little while, and so maybe he just kept a close eye on Ebbsfleet themselves as well. And it just seemed like both managers just swapped over, and it was and then it was a battle out for most of the year for them two sides that he'd swap players in. So yeah, it was a weird season, obviously in the final as well. Then to get them in the Kent Senior Cup final, and then to get them the following week in the final was just sort of, when you look back on that, it was always going to happen like that. Of course it was, with the players that had changed places and the press coverage and all that, it was always going to happen. It just so happened they won the Kent Senior Cup, which is not really remembered, and then we won a playoff final, which is obviously a great memory.
What was that like for you, going back to, you were captain of Dover then, and playing the playoff final back at Stonebridge Road and winning it?
Superb. No better feeling, obviously, to be able to lift the trophy and to be captain of a side that have just been promoted was absolutely superb. you know, I got a little bit of stick from some of the fans. Some of them were kind of at that stage where they just wanted to abuse me and go, and that was fine. I got that. And there was some, you know, I got a lot of friends from there, from being there so long, and some fans that have followed us in difficult times. I just went up to them and said, like, you know, as much as it is, I apologise for that, but, you know, your time will come. And they were like, nah, it's great, you know, you crack on, your turncoat, and all that sort of business. And so it was good banter with a lot of them as well. And obviously, you know, we lift the trophy, and then I was in their bar afterwards with all their fans and stuff, and just talking general life, really. It's part and parcel of football. And like you say, they have got their time, and they've got it back now, and they're obviously, you know, in a Conference Premier, the same as Dover, and everyone's on the same sort of wavelength. So yeah, it was a little bit strange, but you get caught up in the moment anyway. When you're celebrating, you kind of forget where you are. It was just almost with some of the players, it was weird. They didn't come back out and watch it, which is their own sort of choice. But they didn't come out and watch us celebrate, and that's their decision. But obviously, it was quite difficult where they'd got some of the Dover or some of the ex-Dover players that had gone to Ebbsfleet had obviously got a lot of issues with the manager and vice versa. So it was one of those things.
How did your time at Dover come to an end?
I broke a bone in my ankle away at Southport, and I was playing every game up until then, but broke my ankle away at Southport, come back, and again, similar situation to what happened at Tunbridge. I needed to go out on loan, needed to get some games, and I went out on loan to Maidstone. At the time, I was just nearly going to go to Leatherhead because Mike Sandman was there at the time who was helping out with Dover stuff. I nearly went there. Literally, Maidstone called up maybe 30 minutes before I was going to go to Leatherhead. And Jay said, look, we want you in Maidstone. And I said to Chris, well, I'm going to Maidstone and I'm going to go in somewhere that are successful. And at the time, they were sitting top of the league. So I said, well, I'll go there. You know, it's a no-brainer. It's right on my doorstep. We'll go there. So I did. I went to Maidstone. And it was actually after the first, I think it was the second month of the Maidstone loan, Chris said to me, look, I want to get you back. I want you to come. I said, am I going to play? And he said, well, obviously you'll be on the bench. So I said, well, I'll stay then. I'll stay. I'll win something at Maidstone, and then I'll come back sort of in the summer. And he was like, okay, if you want to stay, that's up to you. And I said, well, you know, I'll stay and play, and I'm it's an opportunity to win something that, you know, it doesn't come around very often. So I stayed. Stayed an extra month, and then it was then my choice to leave Dover then at that stage. They were training three nights a week in Bromley, which was difficult for me to get to. I just started a new job, which is in Barking and Dagenham. So it was a little bit of a journey for me to be getting to Bromley from there in an evening kickoff three times a week. And I just thought, it's time for a change. You know, I'd kind of been out at Maidstone, and then going back would have been difficult. I didn't really truly believe that I would have been a player and would have been a starter. So I kind of just decided to go, and Chris didn't bother me. Chris is a manager that doesn't ring you and bother you 24/7. Do you want to sign or not? He's kind of like, you turn up at pre-season and almost expect to be signed, you know. So he didn't call me, and you know, it wasn't a case that we fell out or anything like that. We're good friends. It's just a case of I thought that it was needed something different at the time, and like I said, I thought it was Maidstone, wasn't to be, and then went on to see where else it was, and it was Eastbourne.
So to have this three promotions on your CV, obviously great moments at the time, but with the perspective you've got now as an old man, 30,
yeah.
you know, what does it mean to have those promotions, and what would you say to your Tunbridge teammates now as they're going into this playoff game?
They're special memories. They're memories that you never, ever forget them. You never, ever kind of, all the while you're in football or out of football, they're moments you never forget with your family and people around you. I said a couple of times to the Tunbridge boys, and we had just before the Cole Shorten game, we had a huddle, and I said to the boys, I said, you'll never guarantee to get this opportunity again. I said, there's one thing in football, you do not know what next season's going to bring around. I said, and we don't know what's going to be around the corner next week, let alone sort of in a year's time, and we go and get promotion then. It doesn't happen, you know. I said to them, in 12 years, and I said, and I'm not talking about myself, I'm using my experiences. In 12 years, I've had three playoffs, or two playoffs and a promotion, and that's in 12 years. So it's not a case of in every season you're in the playoffs. You know, I've not been in the playoffs the other seasons. I've been mid-table or a couple of times I've been in relegation battles. So they don't come around very often, and it's if you don't take that moment when it's there, you don't know when it's next going to come up. And like I say, for some people, it may never. I just said to him, as a person, you know, you have to kind of don't be that person that finishes their career and says, well, yeah, I had a great career. Oh, did you play off some? No, I didn't get any of that. You know, I didn't get as far as that, but I had a good career. You know, be that person that can say, actually, I've got 3 medals. You know, I've done something. I've got 3, 4, 2, whatever it is. Get a medal that you can show somebody. You know, you've got a memory of playing football and you've got a couple of medals you're able to show, you know. I've had times when I've been able to, I always remember when my son was, you know, he was at the Maidstone game and he had the trophy, walked around the picture of me and he's got the trophy, you know, and the Ebbsfleet one, I've got a picture of all three of my kids and my wife on the pitch, you know, with the massive trophy and the cup. And so, and I've still got them now today, and he still does look at them, you know, and he's still heavily involved in it, and they all are. And they're moments that you never, ever forget because you've got something to show for it. So it's just basically don't be that, you know, don't be that person that wastes an opportunity or doesn't, you know, it might not always go your way, but make sure that if you get an opportunity, you take it as much as you possibly can.
On to the quick-fire questions. Obviously, as a regular listener of the podcast, Craig, yep. you've got an idea what's coming up. Yep. What's the best ground you've played at?
I'd probably say Huddersfield. I played at Huddersfield, which is a nice stadium at the time, and probably more because it was unexpected to be involved, and then I was, and it was kind of, the stadium kind of overtook me a little bit, really. I was on the bench and didn't get on, but that stadium kind of overtook me, and I think I got a few minutes, but that stadium kind of, I looked at that and thought, now I'm in the Football League, I'm in a proper stadium. So that in terms of with fans and with it being a packed house, that was probably the best, and with the atmosphere and stuff, so it was good.
I think you've already admitted you might not have many to choose from, but best goal you've scored?
It would now be the Tunbridge goal, through just the fact that I hadn't scored for so many years and the extent of that goal, that would be my best. But it's kind of a strange one. I've scored a few goals. They're not normally rubbish tap-ins. They're normally goals that people go, did you actually mean that, though? But the Tunbridge one would be the best one I've scored. And obviously the one at Gillingham for Johnson's Paint was special as well.
Who's your best friend in football?
I've got a few. Andy Pugh's a top friend of mine. Is someone I class as a best friend. You know, he's someone that I've known and grown up with through Gillingham for a long, long time. Nathan Elder is another player that I've played with at quite a few clubs, and he seems to follow me around quite a lot. Or he'll probably say that I follow him. But I've you know, there's lots of people. You know, Sonny Miles now at Tunbridge is someone that I was with at Maidstone at. We're now sort of real good friends. You know, Sammy Moore as well, who I sort of work with and we see regularly. So, yeah, you have, when you're in football, you gain a lot of friends, and some end up being good friends and some just people you know.
Thinking about all your teammates you've had over the years, was there one player who made you laugh the most?
Clint Easton was, he was very, very funny. He was annoying as well at times because... He would go on and on and on and on, but he was always full of life, and he not only on the football field, off the football field, he was always full of banter. He was a funny guy. James Folkes now at Tunbridge, I think in terms of his humour, he's something else. You know, he should be a stand-up comedian, I think. Stop football and go in and do that. He'd be great at that. He's very, very funny. And then obviously people like Andy Hessenthaler, always full of jokes, always. You'd walk into the dressing room and you'd go, oh, can you just wait there for a sec? I just need to ask you something. And you'd be there for 20 minutes because it's Andy Hessenthaler. You think, oh, I can't go because he's going to moan if I go. And actually, he's just winding you up. You know, he's that sort of character. But he's never, ever changed. He must have been, 30, I don't know how many times over, that guy. So he was, always on the banter. And he was very, very funny. He was good.
Who's the worst for picking up fines?
When we was at Gillingham, that was the best sort of fines committee we ever had, where it would be, if you got fined and you argued it back. So this is where Ronnie Jepson was good man manager. He would, on a Friday, we'd have a fines committee before we'd go to training. And it was just basically, let's take as much money from people as we possibly can. I was sat there at the time thinking, don't come for me. But there was quite a few that Nicky Southall would always pay a lot of money because he would argue the fine. I don't know why you'd argue it because you're only going to double it, but he'd always argue it and he'd always double it and treble it and whatever, because he would have this great explanation as to why he was going to get out of this fine, and then next thing you know, it's yeah, that's really, really good. That's double because we're not going for it. So yeah, he ended up paying quite a bit.
In all the time you've played as a right back, who's the best goalkeeper you've played in front of?
Johnny Henley at the moment is he could be a real top goalkeeper. I forget how young he is, but he's very, very good. And he's a good guy and a good person to be around. Preston Edwards at his time. When he was getting into England, I really thought that he was going to go and play Football League for a long, long time and a top level. And so I'd say probably him. Lance Cronin at the time was at England as well. So, yeah, playing in front of, I'd say one of those three.
Best piece of advice that you've been given in your career?
Probably just not to take the game too seriously, which is a strange one, but when I was growing up, it used to be one that if I'd give the ball away, I'd beat myself up. If I didn't win a game, I wouldn't talk to anyone for days and weeks on end. You know, my wife was probably the best for that because she would come home and she'd be like, "It's not my fault. You're not very good. Stop taking it out on the rest of the world." You know, I'd be like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "Just stop sulking. It's football. You know, and the kids obviously come along, change that as well because you can't be grumpy with them. They don't allow you to. And so it was. It's just not to take it. You know, there's more. Football is my life, but there's more, you know, important things, if you like, and when the family comes along and your wife and stuff like that, and you realise, actually, I can't be going after a game and taking it out on them. You know, it's not their fault. It isn't their fault. We've lost, and you lose. You're going to lose games of football. You're going to win some as well. So it's kind of just trying to be, whether you win or lose, it's kind of, you just keep that same mentality, and you just, you don't take it out on other people. You just move on. It's part and parcel of football.
Speaking to you over the last hour or so, it's easy to see how much your family means to you. Your son Josh plays football, doesn't he? So
yes,
my
last
question is, what is your advice to him as he's looking to maybe have a football career of his own?
Just to enjoy it. And it's a very strange, people say to me, he's just signed at Gillingham, and people say to me, do you want him to go and be a footballer? I said, I don't care. I'm not fussed. You know, don't get me wrong, it's the best life in the world. You know, for me, there's nothing better than to go out in front of thousands of people and play a game of football. But whether that's the best career and whether that's the most secure, I've been through times when, like I say, you're chasing money, you're down a job centre trying to sign on. So just go and enjoy it, and just to make sure you're doing other things, do your education, and make sure you're still sort of trying other hobbies. And if it's football, it's great. If not, then it's not. You know, there's no pressure on him. I just enjoy watching him play, and he loves the game. He loves coming to Tunbridge and kicking the ball around beforehand and supporting me, so which is, it's just great to be able to share the moments where he enjoys football and I enjoy football. You know, I always say to people, I think he'd be a better coach than he will player anyway, because he's always in the dressing room listening to team talks and stuff like that, and he loves it. So just to go and enjoy what he does, and no pressure, just see what happens.
Craig, time sadly has beaten us. We've got to let you go to work as well, because
that's the last
hour or so you might get another fine coming.
Yeah, that's right, absolutely.
Might be doubled if you come up with an excuse that you appeared on the podcast as well.
Yeah, I'll let them find that one out. Yeah, that's great.
If anyone who's listened to the last hour or so doesn't learn anything as a youngster looking to get into the game or otherwise, then they never will. So thanks very much for your insight. Really enjoyed it, and best of luck to Tunbridge in the playoffs as well.
Lovely. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.